You are Locked On Fantasy, your daily fantasy football podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Locked On Fantasy Football Podcast. As usual, I'm your host, Vinny Iyer, and when I'm not doing this, I'm writing about NFL and fantasy football for SportingNews.com. So come over to the site, check it out, and we are starting a new week here on Locked On Fantasy Football, and we've got some things up there at Sporting News that you can look at, the early Week 6 rankings. First, we got to put Week 5 in the books. That's what we do here on Roundup Monday. So looking at all the Thursday and Sunday action and the takeaways there. And speaking of takeaways, we'll have high-stakes takeaways from Tom Kesnick of the NFFC, and he's also got an important basketball announcement for you fantasy basketball players as well. So important there to find out what the high stakes players are doing in fantasy football, and we'll get his thoughts on some of the games here in week five that we've seen some crazy results as usual. Again, here we are to break down everything we saw, to react without overreacting, and help you build a better team and roster and starting lineup here going forward, and try to do better next week. That's all we're trying to do in fantasy football, do a little bit better than we did last week, improve every game, and that's exactly what NFL coaches and teams do. And it was a crazy week. We have to start with the Patriots and Colts, throwing it back to Thursday night. The takeaway here is that when you have no T.Y. Hilton and Jack Doyle, Eric Ebron is going to dominate. He's an integrated part of this offense. 15 targets here. Chester Rogers pretty much stepped in seamlessly as the number one wide receiver target, but Ebron has the high upside there, so it's pretty much an Ebron-Hilton offense. Jack Doyle, we have to see if he can return here, but they want to really spread the ball around, and Ebron is kind of a hybrid wideout for them, and he's going to be out there all the time there. If they're trailing in the high volume, is going to be there. This team that really can't run the ball is not going to come and just slam it in front of you. They did have a good game here, 21 carries for 84 yards. Nyheim Hines looked pretty darn good there with the 90 yards from scrimmage and 22 touches. So he's going to have that type of day, kind of be versatile, try to get some points. But not bad if you're looking for an RB2 or flex play, especially in a PPR league. But Ebron is the beast. He's an every week start at this point. Never thought we'd say that given his end of the time with Detroit. He's been frustrating. We've drafted him so high. But now we drafted him late and we're really benefiting, or he got him off free agency in week one. So this is not really fluky. The targets are there. The end zone looks are there. Everything is there for Eric Ebron to keep producing. So good scene there. I think this team will get healthier with the mini bye. But Andrew Luck, still with that volume, is going to be very productive in the matchups like this that are rather favorable, and the Colts are trailing. So it all lines up well for there for production. Now on the other side of thing with the Patriots, sloppy game for Tom Brady. Still had three TDs, 341 yards, and added a rushing TD. So that kind of helped wipe out his two picks there in terms of production. So very big game for Tom Brady. Tom Brady-like game. And we finally saw Josh Gordon score. Long shot play near the end, but it really helped the Patriots get the Chiefs next week. So that's good. Robert Gronkowski rather quiet overall, but solid 6 for 75 on 7 targets. Julian Edelman right back in the mix. But they got more guys who can cut into his time. Gordon and Gronk and James White looking solid again out of the backfield as a receiver. So Edelman, I think, is a PPR play, more of a regular. Josh Gordon is the play I'm looking at standard leagues going forward. But both and Gronkowski are very playable against Chiefs, as well as James White and Sonny Michel. So this is pretty much the five tiers of this offense, while Chris Hogan is kind of fading. So if you think about all those mouths to feed, Hogan and Philip Dorsett and Cordarrelle Patterson, they're just going to be very limited and hard to trust here with the targets and touches there going forward for New England. But Sonny Michel locked in as a lead back in this offense. They're looking at Mike Gillisley, bringing him back. Maybe he'll pilfer some touchdowns, but Brady did steal one here at the goal line from those backs this week. So Michelle's still the guy with upside there in the backfield. White in PPR leagues is kind of an every week play until further notice, because he's being involved no matter what the game flow is. Our next game that we look at as we flip to 1 p.m. on Sunday, it was the Jets and the Broncos. Now, this game came out of nowhere, an offensive explosion. They rushed for 323, the Jets do. 219 for Isaiah Crowell, including a 77-yard touchdown. 15 for 219. An insane game. And Bilal Powell had 20 for 99. They just fell short of a 100-yard game. There was a late loss of carry. So when you look at that, this rushing attack, this offensive line played very well. Darnold was also well protected. He only completed 10 passes in 22 attempts, but made three of them count with touchdowns. Terrell Pryor made a great catch for him. Robbie Anderson, in his old ways of big plays for Josh McCown, showed up here and delivered 3 for 123 on five targets there and two scores. So Robbie Anderson, if you played him as a very, very contrarian DFS play, you were thrilled this week. But he seems to be more back in this offense as they're more confident throwing downfield. And an indication of that was Quincy Enunwa being totally blanked from the box score this week. So it's all going to be more about running and setting the deep shots. And Darnold, with the more confidence, they're going to go in that direction. Now, on the other side of things, Case Keenum still balled out here with 377 and two TDs, but still sloppy. Just not one I'm going to trust and want to get my lineup. He had the pick there that was almost a pick six late in the game. Got sacked four times. He's on the verge of being benched. We knew the running backs were going to have a hard time. Phillip Lindsay at least scratched out 81 yards from scrimmage. Royce Freeman shut down with the game flow not in his favor here with only 47 yards from scrimmage. So Demaryius Thomas, random late touchdown. He was a little bit more efficient, 5-6 for 106. Emmanuel Sanders, that connection, not as good. 9 catches for 72 on 14 targets. So you want a lot more. In a PPR, you're okay with a 9 for 14, but in a standard, it's really hard to trust Sanders at this point. So we'll see what happens. The Rams are up next, a tough matchup, but we know the Rams' secondary is a little questionable at this point. I would look at the running backs here and still look at the Broncos, looking more at those guys to be affected. Now, our next game that we look at 1 p.m. was the Bengals coming back to beat the Dolphins. They were down 14-0 in this game. It looked pretty bad. Andy Dalton didn't play well. We didn't really like him this week, more so because of the running, but 248 yards, TD interception. So not awful, but not startable when this is a league where everyone's going off. Joe Mixon, so much for being limited, 25 touches immediately. That's their sweet spot for Mixon. He goes there well over 100 yards with 93 rushing, 22 receiving, and a touchdown there through the air. So great return for Mixon. Not much else going on here. Tyler Boyd, I think that cut into it. They're building run the ball a little bit more. Boyd, they didn't have to throw too much with the defensive touchdowns. That kind of hurt Boyd here. The game flow would have been in the favor, but they scored a couple touchdowns there with the Dolphins making mistakes, and therefore not as much throwing. A.J. Green, solid game, 6 of 112 on 10 targets. No John Ross in this game, so the tight end is going to be a little bit iffy. No involvement from Tyler Kroft at all. C.J. Azuma and Alex Erickson kind of splitting that role at this point. So Azuma can have some bigger days. He didn't only need two targets to get 43 yards there, 26-yard and 17-yard play. So he's got some chops here, and I think he's going to have some better days in matchups where they're going to have to put it up a little bit more in the passing game. And that could definitely be this week against the Steelers and how much they give up to tight ends and slot receivers like Boyd. Now, you look on the other side, the Dolphins, it's really hard to tell when Kenyon Drake gets involved. He was the leading receiver here. That's how bad it was. 7 for 69 and a TD on 11 targets. We knew he was getting 11 targets and a good chunk there of carries, even behind Frank Gore, 12 to 6. Even if it's 2 to 1 like that, if we know he's getting about a combination of 15 touches and targets, we're going to play Drake. But the problem is you can't trust that from week to week. So very frustrating with Drake. I think you have to realize for the Dolphins, if they can't get anything going downfield, they have to involve Drake a little bit more in the passing game and the running game. It's absurd to me how productive this guy is, and they don't want to play him as much. So some coaches' weirdness there with Adam Gase, and you're going to go for the best. I think Drake drops from an RB2 even consideration to that flex spot, but let's hope this is something that they say, hey, this guy can get us in the games. Let's still wait and see approach. Our next game was the Steelers all over the Falcons, 41-17. We thought this was going to be a shootout, closer on both sides. Matt Ryan grinded through here, ended up at 285 and a touchdown. If he had one more, he'd feel really good, but he's under siege. 6 sacks, this big Steelers defensive performance coming out of nowhere in this one. Part of it was that the Falcons couldn't run, so they could tee off on Matt Ryan here. Devonta Freeman's return was a disaster. Dismay, this was a three-headed backfield. Of course, Ito Smith gets the touchdown. So hard to trust the Falcons running backs now, especially with Smith cutting in as the vulture. And Mohamed Sanu, another great slot matchup, took advantage, 4 for 73 on 7 targets and a TD. Austin Hooper, 9 for 77. So really now Sanu, Calvin Ridley's going to have some down games in that sense if Sanu has a good slot matchup, 4 for 38 on 5 targets. And Julio Jones, a major disappointment in a game like this, 5 for 62 on 9 targets and no TDs, of course, because he's Julio Jones. Austin Hooper, 9 for 77 was the leader. So when you look at this, they're going to spread the ball around a little bit more, and that's what's happening. And Julio Jones, they're not going to force feed, especially when Sanu can play so well, and Ridley has had some big games as well. So eventually the touchdown will come for Julio Jones, but we're going to have to wait. Maybe it's the Buccaneers this week who are giving up everything to wide receivers, even more so than the Steelers. On the Steelers side, I think it was good to see James Conner have a solid game. I think it's product more of the matchup where the Falcons can't really stop the run or cover backs out of the backfield. So he has 185 yards from scrimmage and a couple of touchdowns on 25 touches, so a good regular workload there. You know, this was a bit of an Antonio Brown overcorrection game. It happened. Very inefficient, 6 of 13, but 101 yards and 2 TDs there. Juju Smith-Schuster didn't have to be too much involved. The Steelers were able to run away and control this game, but he still had a TD for you early in this one. So Vance McDonald, they started using Xavier Grimble and Jesse James again at tight end, and that was just ugly here. So this tells you can't really trust the Steelers' tight ends. Sorry about that, but that's the case here where the things have broken down here for the Steelers. They're kind of more of a committee approach. Brown and Smith-Schuster are going to be the only consistent sources. In the passing game, it's going to fluctuate from week to week, Connor and which tight end supports. And the Ryan Switzer experiment is over. He's just a blip in this offense for now. And by the way, James Washington, just not a part of things. So if you're hoping for some big things from this year, I think that's done here for the Steelers rookie from Oklahoma State. And the defense, man, you can't say enough about TJ Watt. If you have him in IDP leagues, what a monster. 3 sacks in this game. So maybe the Steelers defense, with their offense playing so well, can play well in some games against some one-dimensional offense and really tee off. And this is the kind of performance we've been waiting to see from the Steelers defense all season. Now, ever since I started doing this podcast, people ask me, what team do I like this week, Steelers or Falcons? Well, at Sporting News, I picked the Steelers to win that game. They won a little bit easier than I thought, and that's how you can put your knowledge to the test, by going to a great betting site online. And I got to tell you, MyBookie is the only place I would recommend going, because you can go look at the reviews online and everyone's raving about them. They're such a good site for your action from week to week. And it's a nice new bettors marketplace. So you can get in there, get on the action. It's become more mainstream. And they're going to make it as easy for you as possible. They got live in-game betting. They got a mobile site that makes wagering on the go an absolute breeze. And it's just a fun site to use, whether you're doing the mobile or the desktop. MyBookie is going to get you in the game. And the best part is when you play and you win, MyBookie is going to pay you out pretty fast. They have great payout system there and the best player perks in the business here. And now, given there's a lot of new bettors, if you can wait and deposit after 7 p.m. Eastern time when the traffic is less, they'll give you a $25 bonus as well as matches your deposit dollar for dollar there. If you use the promo code LOCKEDON25, that's LOCKEDON25 there to take advantage of that offer from MyBookie. And again, I can't recommend it enough. It's a good time to get in the action. If you're a fantasy football player, you can even do side bets on the over-under of a particular fantasy point scored in a week. So all kinds of games there. And MyBookie, you play, you win, you get paid. Use that promo code LOCKEDON25 to save that money and get your deposit match there. When we come back, we will have Tom Kesnick of High Stakes Fantasy for some takeaways on 4 of the biggest matchups of Week 5. Joining me now for some high stakes takeaways from week 5 action that was on Thursday and Sunday is Tom Kesnick of High Stakes Fantasy. How's it going, Tom?
Doing good. It's certainly an interesting week 5. We got another exciting game coming up, so I'm looking forward to it. It was an interesting, sometimes exciting weekend of games.
Yeah, we got to start with this Packers-Lions game. People want to throw things in the air because they thought
Aaron Jones, this is a perfect spot. And we see the game flow go out of their favor. They abandon the run with the 17-0 deficit for the most part. And then Mike McCarthy says after the game that there are reasons why Aaron Jones doesn't play a lot. And is this a backfield where it's going to be completely hard to trust, given that the game flow is going to maybe push this Packers team to throwing a lot?
It's definitely hard to trust, but here's the thing. I mean, he didn't touch the ball for nearly three full quarters. He got a couple touches with 30 seconds left, and that's meaningless. Game was over. His last meaningful touch in the game came with about 12 minutes to go in the first half. And then he was averaging like 6 yards a touch. And McCarthy went away from him. I mean, that's just poor coaching. And it's costing the Packers. You can point to Mason Crosby, obviously. That was a horrific day at the office for him. But you've got to scheme better, especially against one of the worst run defenses in the NFL. And this, so much of what happened yesterday was on Mike McCarthy. And it's very possible he'll remain stubborn here and prevent Aaron Jones from being more impactful. But you would like to think that if the Packers are serious about trying to win football games, they'll start using their best running back more. And it's become blatantly obvious who the best running back is. I mean, it just is so obvious. I mean, the only one who doesn't seem to want to understand it is Mike McCarthy. I mean, Aaron Rodgers has seen it. He's spoken out about it. And I still think Aaron Jones has a chance here, but yes, it's frustrating. The bad news, I guess, is week six's matchup against San Francisco is another promising matchup. So do you trust Aaron Jones, or do you trust Mike McCarthy? It's a tough question, but with byes upon us, some teams may not have a choice.
Yeah, another on the positive note here with the Packers, Marquez Valdes-Scantling, I thought, looked very good. He wasn't overwhelmed at all. And the main thing here, we always want to look at for young receivers in Green Bay, the trust factor was there from Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, I mean, they really didn't have a choice, right? I mean, with Cobb and Allison out, they had to keep going to him, even when they were making mistakes, and they did make some mistakes. Davante Adams had, you know, he's great. He had a Davante Adams game. So you've got to get these guys the ball if Cobb and Allison are both going to be out. We'll see what happens in week six. But, yes, I thought there were some encouraging things from Valdes-Scantling, and that's important because wide receiver depth is a real issue for the Packers. We've seen it. I talked about it on Twitter and on a serious show all off season, and we've definitely seen it. Somebody has got to step up.
Well, on the other side of the lines, I think there's a bit of a changing of guard. I think we've seen it already early in the season, but Kenny Golladay clearly looks like the number two option. It might be the number one because of his touchdown ability. I know Golden Tate's still heavily involved and doing his thing in the slot, but Kenny Golladay seems like the guy that I'm excited about to play every week for the Lions.
Yeah, I mean, he's just terrific. And you think about the day he had, and he had a long touchdown pass called back by penalty, so it could have been even greater. He's the legitimate package there at wide receiver. He does everything. He's got great size, great hands, runs good routes, has great speed. He's it. So you definitely like him. I agree with you. I think of the three guys there, you know, Marvin Jones, he owns the Packers, so not surprisingly, he scored again, so that's a good matchup for him. But of those three guys, I would agree that Kenny Golladay is the number one guy. I will also say, though, they've got a running back situation there, too, just like the Packers do. Kerryon Johnson is clearly their best running back, but the Lions are committing to LeGarrette Blount, and that's really hurting Kerryon Johnson's ability to make a real fantasy impact as we go forward here. And that situation doesn't look like it's going to change.
Well, the next game was a bit disappointing. It was also a NFC North team involved. The Vikings definitely came through. It's pretty much pretty simple with what the Vikings are doing now. They can't really run effectively. Dalvin Cook hurt, and their offensive line struggling, so it's a lot of Kirk Cousins, Stephon Diggs, and Adam Thielen. On the other side, the Eagles are a hard team to figure out. The backfield is tricky. Alshon Jeffrey is up and down. The only kind of reliable thing here is Zach Ertz. Do you think we'll see some changes where they get maybe Dallas Goedert or Sheldon Gibson maybe some more playing time here?
Well, we also just, before we went on the air here, it was announced that the Eagles just put Jay Ajayi on injured reserve. So they've got some running back questions. Obviously, Corey Clement has been hurt. Darren Sproles has been hurt. And they got a short week this week with the Giants on Thursday. So Wendell Smallwood, if he's sitting on the waiver wire, Wendell Smallwood's going to be a very popular pickup this week. And this could reignite the Le'Veon Bell trade rumors we kind of heard from a few weeks ago, because clearly the Eagles have a need at running back. But as far as what we saw yesterday, they are disjointed offensively. There's no question about it. I think Wentz generally looks good. But Alshon Jeffrey did have a tough matchup, and he didn't do anything with it. Rhodes kind of shut him down. To me, the biggest problem here is Nelson Agholor. He was really good the first couple of games and looked sharp, but he hasn't looked as good since. So they may have to find some other options, because you're right, you've got Zach Ertz. You know what he can do. They could use Darren Sproles back in the passing game, but you've got to find something else besides Ertz, because you just can't trust Alshon Jeffrey consistently. So, and Nelson Agholor has not been coming through. So maybe it is Dallas Goedert, or maybe it's somebody else. But they've got to get some other options there for Carson Wentz.
Now, looking at the game that was maybe a surprising shootout in some respects, but a lot of it was due to a little bit of a special teams bump in this game, the Panthers and Giants. And we got to talk about Odell Beckham Jr., because as much as Pat Shurmur wants to say that this wasn't an issue, or Eli Manning calling him out was an issue, it looks like it worked with Odell Beckham Jr., and it worked just in time for fantasy owners here.
Yeah, I mean, he certainly, it was great to see him catch a touchdown. You certainly weren't banking on a touchdown pass, so it was a big day for Beckham, and it was overdue. And, you know, with him, even with Manning there, Beckham's going to get his as it all plays itself out. He's not really the concern there. Barkley isn't either. He gets his. I think the concern here, again, this is another team that needs some personnel back. They've got to get Evan Engram back on the field. They really miss him offensively. I think we've reached a point with Eli where we kind of know what the deal is, so you don't want to have to put the game in Eli's hands. They need to run it better to kind of take some pressure off Manning. And if that's not working or working at a high level, it's going to be awfully difficult for them to win with Eli, you know, if you're just putting the game in his hands all the time.
Do you see that as like a natural overcorrection by a coach, and you expect to see the consistent Beckham volume all over the field instead of those dink and dunks now?
Yeah, I mean, you got to take advantage of what Beckham can do. So you got to dial those plays up. I think Beckham would be fine. I was never really worried about him. He's just too talented, and eventually the talent it finds its way. So I think he'll be fine. I think the concerns there are, let's get Evan Engram back so that can really open some things up for everybody in the passing game.
Well, I think the other passing game, the Panthers, there's been some issues there as well. They're looking like they'll get Greg Olsen back from the foot injury this week. But looking at it, I think going forward, I think there's slowly going to be more of DJ Moore and less of Devin Funchess in a prominent role in this offense. Because we see Devin Funchess, when he gets a top corner or an above-average corner, it's tough to break free, especially like a Janoris Jenkins type. So do you think maybe that's going to help things get to Moore here a little bit more, so in turn, Funchess will get a little bit more open?
You know, it's going to be interesting, because here's a crazy thing. We look at all these offenses that are putting up all these gaudy passing numbers. You know, we watch the Rams or the Chiefs or anybody really on a weekly basis, the Vikings. The Panthers are 3-1, and Cam Newton has only topped 240 yards passing in a game once. They are winning despite not having prolific passing, and it's not like they run the ball extremely well. I watched that game yesterday. Cam threw for 237. He didn't really run all that big. He had 29 yards rushing, didn't score a rushing touchdown, and they still put up over 30 points. I understand they had the special teams touchdown. Okay. But I still watch it, and I'm like, I don't know how they're doing it. I don't know how they're scoring so many points every week. But getting Greg Olsen back will help. It tends to hurt Funchess, though. Funchess tends to play better when Olsen's out of the lineup. So maybe it's DJ Moore who shows up a little bit more here, no pun intended. But I do think Olsen coming back will definitely help. But this is a team that to this point is winning football games without really passing it exceptionally well or running it exceptionally well.
Well, you look at the Seahawks, they're surprisingly running exceptionally well. They get Chris Carson back, but Mike Davis is still a factor. So you run it there well. And eventually you knew this was going to help Russell Wilson and being able to throw downfield. He has a nice breakout game at home against the Rams that he needed, because fantasy owners were on the verge of dropping him. But you look at it, Doug Baldwin, They incorporated a young receiver there, David Moore, yet another Moore receiver, and Tyler Lockett. That chemistry seems real. Is Doug Baldwin, is the fade real here? He's older and has the knee injury.
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, he's clearly not 100%. And you're talking about a guy who, has injuries on both knees. The numbers just haven't been there. I mean, I kind of wondered if he, like, retired at half. He pulled it was the guy who retired a couple of weeks ago. I thought he might have retired at halftime. I just didn't see him out there.
Yeah.
And Tyler Lockett thing is real. There's no question about that. They are running the ball extremely well. I think you've got a situation now where both running backs are viable fantasy plays, certainly in deeper leagues and with bye weeks on us right now. So, and they want to run it. They want to run the ball. That's who they are. It's always been what they want to do. It helps Wilson a lot. He's terrific at play action and the zone reads. So you look at the passing game, and really Tyler Lockett's the only one I'm interested in right now. Maybe Moore shows up more as we
it's
go.
It's a lot
forward.
Of fun, isn't it?
but have fun with you, right? Maybe that happens, and if it does, he'll go on the radar a little more. But for me, yeah, if I have Doug Baldwin anywhere, and I don't, but if I did, there's no way he sees my starting lineup anytime soon.
Now, on the other side, the Rams, things were good for Cooper Kupp, and Brandon Cooks looked like he was on for a big day, but then both of these guys get concussed. But what I noticed right away, again, these young coaches who believe in their system, they just plug the next guy in. And I looked at Josh Reynolds, and they liked this guy in the past, and I really kind of just liked how he was assimilated into this offense. I think if Cooks and Kupp have to miss time, I'm going right into Josh Reynolds this week to play in my lineups.
Yeah, I think that's a very viable play, and certainly from a DFS perspective, I would imagine he'd be super cheap, so he could be pretty chalky. And there's nothing scary about the matchup. The Broncos' defense is not what it used to be. So, I mean, Sam Darnold lit him up yesterday. So it is a good matchup for Goff. Their offense is really clicking. Obviously, if those guys are out, Robert Woods could have top 10 upside. He could get peppered with targets. But, yeah, I do think Reynolds is somebody to keep an eye on. Concussions are typically difficult things to come back from in a week, so it wouldn't be a surprise if both guys were out. But obviously, this is a situation to monitor. And yes, I agree. If both of those guys are out, Josh Reynolds becomes very appealing. If only one of them is out, though, I'm not sure I'd want to hitch my wagon onto that one because I think they would go heavily with Woods and then either Kupp or Cooks, whichever one is out there.
All right, Tom, good stuff as always. And tell the listeners what you've got working on this week, almost mid-season here.
Yeah, no kidding. The season flies by, doesn't it? I'm going to talk a little basketball this week. I know it's a football podcast, and we all love football. I love football, but this is our final week of drafts. The NBA season actually opens up in 8 days, so we've got 1 week left of drafts in basketball. Our entry fees start as low as $150. You can sign up. You can play in a great – we're the only contest that runs high-stakes fantasy basketball. It's playnfbkc.com. So if you want to get into a great draft, have some basketball fun this year on top of all the football fun you're having, head on over to playnfbkc.com. Sign up. Get into a great league. I promise you'll have a good time this year.
Yeah, you might as well make the transition. It's that time. You can't get enough fantasy football in October, November. So,
yep. And we got drafts tomorrow night, Vinny. No, there's no football games tomorrow.
Yeah,
Wednesday night. Come on, guys, get in there, play some basketball.
And a lot of fun and a lot of scoring in that league as well. So you got to take advantage of that and get in on the action.
Yep.
Well, thanks again, Tom. We'll talk to you next week for some more high stakes takeaways.
All right, Vinny. Looking forward to it.
Thanks again so much to Tom Kesnick. A great spot there. He's always in tune with what fantasy players are doing. And yeah, if you like basketball, football doesn't matter. Getting involved in that high stakes is awesome. So go listen, get in on the action while you can before NBA season tips off there. So I have to tell you, there's a lot of exciting games going on. The NFL is in full swing here. We're about to hit midseason. You got the NBA, as I mentioned, about to tip off for real and have some great, great games for you throughout the season and some good opportunities to play DFS and all that. Well, you also want to check out these games in person. And if you're getting tickets, there's no other place to go than Vivid Seats, the online event ticket marketplace dedicated to providing you with the best
entertainment experiences that last a lifetime. It doesn't matter if it's a sporting event like an NFL game or an NBA game, or a concert or theater tickets. Vivid Seats is the way to go. They offer great prices, and it makes it very easy there on the site. Easy purchasing experience. And with the promo code LOCKEDON, that's locked on, you can receive $20 off orders of $200 or more as a first-time customer of Vivid Seats. So yeah, it's a great offer. You can be good to go to the game of your choice or any other event and use that promo code, and you'll save a good $20. You can use that in concessions and have a real good time at the game there. So Vivid Seats, so easy to use. You can download their mobile app by the App Store or Google Play, and you can enter that promo code there, receive that $20 off your first order of $200 or more there. And the best part is Vivid Seats confirms all orders by 100% guarantee. So Vivid Seats, use the promo code LOCKEDON. I can't recommend it enough as the place to get your tickets to anything on planet Earth. When we get back here, we'll wrap up looking at the rest of the games here coming out of Week 5. Now, let's continue still a few more 1 o'clock games we have to talk about here. The Jaguars and the Chiefs. The Chiefs beat the Jaguars 30-14. Patrick Mahomes, we knew the cool-off was coming at 0 TD passes. He kind of saved his day. It was going to be disastrous, but had that early rushing touchdown, didn't do much later. The other touchdown went to Kareem Hunt. Otherwise, a field goal fest. The Jaguars' defense played really, really well. The offense played well for the most part. They actually had 101 yards rushing here. Blake Bortles had 34 yards, had a 21-yard TD, had 430 yards and a TD, but four picks. That kind of ruined this. The Jaguars had a lot of success doing some good things. At least Bortles was a mixed bag there. It was really disappointing to see DeeDee Westbrook only have three catches for 55 with a great slot matchup. But Dante Moncrief, 6 for 76 on 15 targets. Keelan Cole, 4 for 70 on 10 targets. Really the only efficient receiver is T.J. Yeldon, 8 for 69 and a touchdown on 10 targets. So Bortles was definitely off. The high volume, 33 for 61. The sloppy with the ball here. Could have had a big, big game with the game flow, but just kind of ruined it here. So that makes it say tell you it's tough to trust a guy like Bortles on the road. You want to play him at home for the most part. And with T.J. Yeldon, you look here that he's going to be very valuable because he's versatile. Now Corey Grant had a Liss Frank injury in this game, so he is down for the season here as the satellite receiving back. So it's going to be a lot of Yeldon in a row, and he's going to get some touches there even when Leonard Fournette comes back. So he's locked into me as a borderline RB1 until Fournette returns because he gets it done no matter what the game flow, and that's what you want out of a top back. The Chiefs at Kareem Hunt looked very good running on this Jaguars defense. They got worn down, bend and break. So considering Jalen Ramsey contained Tyreek Hill, pretty decent game PPR for Sammy Watkins, 6 for 78. Travis Kelce didn't score, but 5 for 100. You'll take that all the time from your top tight end there. So the Chiefs, we're going to have a bad game. I don't think the Patriots next week is going to be that at all. They'll rebound here, and Mahomes will go off. So Mahomes is human, which is good to know, and he's not above all tough matchups, and that's good to know going forward if you had another QB alternative to go there. And it never hurts to have two QBs. It doesn't matter what level they are. Options, matchups, you want to be able to play them all the time, and you can do that when you have two of that level. Now, this was a disappointing game. Matchup we thought was good for Joe Flacco. He did have 300 yards passing, almost 298. Had a pick. Somehow they didn't do anything here. They ran the ball well. The box score looks good, but the turnovers and just breakdowns, had a blocked field goal attempt there by Justin Tucker. So it was overall very ugly. The Ravens continued to not feed Alex Collins in key situations. Of course, it was Buck Allen who lost the fumble this week. So all this talk about Collins being ball secure, let's hope they are fair to Buck Allen as well and try to bench him. So there's something that they don't totally like about Collins. It's sad because he's the better runner and now the more ball secure runner there. So it's a situation that I'm not thrilled about. It's basically touchdown dependent for either of these guys going forward. John Brown, the cool off is going to happen. Flacco was off a lot. He only had four catches for 58 yards and 14 targets. 6 for 12 for Michael Crabtree for 68. So forcing the pass a lot to me, Baltimore is, when you have Collins and a defense, and they maybe could have won the game a little bit easier with that sense. So it's really hard to trust Marty Morningweg right now and John Harbaugh with the game plans from week to week, and that's unfortunate here. But Collins, to me, I'm downgrading to flex more than RB2 going forward, and Brown still, John Brown's still a guy I'm looking at as a wide receiver three more in fantasy from week to week. On the other side of things, Baker Mayfield looked rather good, had a pick. There's going to be mistakes all the time, but made up for the pick. This is how I kind of look at the erasing of the pick. 2 for 23 rushing, so that's plus 2, minus 2. It's a wash there, so in the end you get 342 and a TD from Mayfield. So the volume is nice, even in a game like this that's 12-9. And you know there's going to be some games with extra short. Unfortunately, Rashad Higgins, who had the touchdown, got hurt here. Antonio Callaway kind of faded in this offense. They hinted at that, so it's more the Jarvis Landry, David Njoku show right now. 69 yards for both these guys. Very similar targets in the middle of the field, and that's what you're going to see mainly. And going forward, the Browns have some really good matchups there, and I expect they want to be run heavy with Carlos Hyde. We didn't see more of Nick Chubb. We saw the same amount. This time he only tallied 2 yards there on 3 carries, so not the same Oakland explosion, but overall, I think Hyde, Landry, and Njoku is where this team wants to center most of its efforts there in the offense, and that's what we saw definitely in this game. It's encouraging with a great schedule, much better schedule ahead, that Mayfield is kind of putting up some numbers for us in fantasy football. There's not much to talk about our next game either. 13-12, the Bills beat the Titans. It's another ugly game, disappointing for the Titans. The Titans running game, I don't know what to do. They had so much promise, Deion Lewis and Derrick Henry. Actually, Derrick Henry looked okay in this game. It was 11 for 58. I don't understand why he didn't get the ball more in this one. Deion Lewis struggled, lost a fumble. So that should have helped Henry a little bit more, but it did not. And the receiving core really shut down by Tre'Davious White, starting with Corey Davis. And then Tywan Taylor couldn't get going either. Tajay Sharpe was just a guy in this one. So brutal game for the Titans offense all around. And they lose this game unless you trotted out Ryan Succop. You were pretty disappointed with the results there from the Titans. Now you look on the other side with the Bills. You got LeSean McCoy had 85 yards, more than we expected there from scrimmage. Went over with 23 receiving yards, so not a bad game for McCoy. I still think Chris Ivory looks like a better runner at this point, but really hard to trust anything. There's only one TD here. Josh Allen only 82 yards passing. Had his touchdown come to the ground. So still not much to see here. We thought maybe some other receivers get involved, but Zay Jones, Kelvin Benjamin, absolutely no receiver in Buffalo is worth owning on your fantasy team at this point. Now let's flip to the late games. The Chargers all over the Raiders, 26-10. We thought there could be more points in this one, but the Raiders were really sloppy with the ball. Here they had an interception red zone that was ugly by Derek Carr that was near the goal line, and they didn't give it to Marshawn Lynch. He had 9 for 31. So this game got out of hand quickly for the Raiders. They just couldn't do anything. It was 17-3 at halftime. It was 23 by the fourth quarter. So the Chargers were well in control. Still, Phillip Rivers threw well here with 339 and 2 TDs. He's just been solid, consistent every week, and sometimes you just want that. Fantasy football, Keenan Allen, good PPR to 8 for 90. You know the touchdowns are not going to always be there, but very good game for him. Melvin Gordon continues to be a machine of all-purposeness for this team. 23 touches. They're just balling every week. 120 and a TD for Gordon. Again, the per catch and per carry average are not great, but he still gets the job done. Austin Eckler never goes away. Seems to make a big play. Had one catch for 44 yards and took it to the house in this one. So great flex player. He's the ideal version of flex player that gets enough touches and is very efficient with them in his game. So Chargers are looking good overall here. And the defense, maybe with Joey Bosa coming soon, there's some good feelings about that being a fantasy asset more consistently. We go and stay in the late window here with the Cardinals and 49ers. And with this one, we're looking at Josh Rosen looked pretty good. Hit a long touchdown early to Christian Kirk there, a 75-yarder. But after that, it was very quiet. So got that. Christian Kirk, if you played him, you were happy. He's clearly the number one receiver here for Rosen. Larry Fitzgerald only 2 for 35 and 3 targets. He's getting on the verge of droppable. I know it's hard with that name. but it's definitely possible. This offense is pretty much Christian Kirk and a lot of David Johnson. David Johnson was pretty spectacular this week. 55 rushing yards, so not great, but the two TDs and also involved in the passing game. So at least using him better, he's very viable again, and living up to his first-round draft status there in fantasy now. But Christian Kirk is the receiver to own, not Fitzgerald there at this point with Josh Rosen and that chemistry. For the 49ers, another injury. Matt Breida got hurt, high ankle sprain. Looked good early, did catch a touchdown here. Short one from C.J. Beathard, so he produced before he left out for you. But Alfred Morris, he was droppable, but then something happened to Breida, and now he's in the mix. But keep in mind that Kyle Juszczyk is going to be used a lot as well. If Breida has to miss time, Raheem Mostert lost a fumble, so that's going to help Morris's cause see some key touches. And you can't complain with what Morris did, 91 yards. Totally, you'll take that from an RB2 or flex in this particular season. So Alfred Morris is where you're going if you've got Matt Breida and you're looking for some shares of this 49ers offense next week. They're playing the Packers, so we'll see how that goes. But a good way to think about it there to get your even the mini handcuffs on your team. So we'll close here looking at the Sunday night game. Not too much offense there. Deshaun Watson did have 376 yards and a TD through a pick. He had 40 rushing yards. We know that 40 rushing is always kind of like a bonus TD for him, almost there in the four-point lead. It's definitely there. So Watson, you could have hoped for a bigger game, but you'll take it. He had the 49 catch hookup with DeAndre Hopkins, like 9 for 151. The breaking news here, Will Fuller didn't score with Deshaun Watson. He actually had a bad game. He scores in every game, but only 2 for 16 here. Kiki Kuti is a problem here. If you're a Will Fuller owner, he is good, and he's gets open and does good things all over the field. So that's going to hurt Fuller, who's been a trick, big play, and scoring guy for this team pretty much here this season. So Kuti can do a little bit more. He's versatile, 6 for 51 and a TD on 7 targets. So he's definitely viable in the conversation as a wide receiver 3. Will Fuller I'm still liking as a wide receiver 2 weekly, but you knew this was going to happen at some point where he's going to get shut down. But we have to watch Kuti versus Fuller, and their target share is 7-3. So maybe we're looking at Fuller not being completely healthy this one. And Alfred Blue is a great example. 28 touches here. Not very efficient, but when you get the touches, 28 touches for 119 yards. So any running back is viable. As long as they get the touches, they can be mediocre and pedestrian. But Lamar Miller missed this game with a chest injury. You have a Alfred Blue sighting and some decent production there for sure. So that's the moral of the story. Never discount a running back that's going to get touches and start whoever it is, even if their talent is limited. And Blue is a perfect example of that. 19-16 was the final, so a lot of scoring here. On the other side, Dak Prescott looked okay and looks miraculous at some times, but ugly at other times, not getting enough help from his receivers. But Prescott just extremely hard to trust. Week after week, had the pick here, 34 yards rushing, 208 and a TD. So just not enough for the fantasy viability. With this tough day, they had some thing going with Jeff Swaim and Rico Gathers early, the tight ends, but completely went away from it for some reason. Forced the ball into Cole Beasley in weird situations. Deontay Thompson, just a guy. Allen Hurns was the only good throw, and it was a 3-yard touchdown. That was the only connection between Hurns and Prescott. So I'm staying away from this passing game. Guess who they get this week? It's the Jaguars. And you just want them to show a little bit so Zeke Elliott gets some open looks. Now, it wasn't a terrible game for Elliott. He did have 27 touches and turned them into 84 yards. But Elliott, after the big game last week, there you expected a little bit more coming off the Detroit blow-up. But just hard when you can't respect the passing game. Teams are going to focus in on Zeke. And that's what you saw here with the Texans. They were struggling in all other aspects and trusted their pass defense to take care of this pedestrian team. So Jaguars, I think it could be another bit of tough sledding for Ezekiel Elliott coming up here in week 6 there. And there you have it. There's a look at all the games there Thursday and Sunday, from Thursday night to Sunday night. We still have Monday night there with the Saints and Redskins to close things out. Here, we'll break that game down on the next show. We'll also have a weekly waiver wire with Eric Edholm and talk about some of the pickups you want to target and some of the upside of these players that are going to be out there and a lot more on the waiver wire and free agency to help your fantasy football team. And thanks again to Tom Kesnick for helping us with a look at week five, a get in on the NFC, a get in on high stakes fantasy basketball. Do that now. And a reminder, we'll be back again with Eric at Home tomorrow. We'll have Jeff Ratcliffe of Pro Football Focus there on Wednesday. Tyler Lochner, Pro Football Focus on Thursday. That's our new lineup, Expert Edition. Thanks so much for listening. This has been Vinny Iyer. We'll see you next time on Locked On Fantasy Football.